Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and today I have a writer joining me. She's done work for DC, Dark Horse, has a Top Cow series coming out soon, in addition to a previous series at Aftershock. She's currently working on her PhD in rhetoric and composition, in addition to teaching writing at the University of Buffalo. Outside comics, an accomplished Muay Thai fighter, as well as a hockey player. It's my pleasure to welcome Stephanie Phillips back to the show. Stephanie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me back. And thanks for the awesome intro.
Oh, my pleasure. You're always so busy. So I love it when you take the time to talk.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
So before we get into the upcoming series that you have coming out with Aftershock and a little bit of talk about some of your other projects, if people want to reach out on social media, if they want to follow along, find out what you're up to, where's the best place online to engage with you?
Probably Twitter. I'm at Steph_Smash. It's really the only social media I use, so probably the best place to find me.
Great, and I'll put a link to Stephanie's Twitter in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding her, you can go and check it out there. So as I mentioned previously, did a project at Aftershock called Descendants. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the reception of that series before we get into your upcoming series at Aftershock, Artemis and the Assassins. But I did mention you'd done some other work, a series at Dark Horse. And then you have something coming up with Top Cow that has me really excited. You want to give us a quick rundown of what you're currently working on?
Yeah, sure. So I'm doing the book that was just announced with Top Cow is a pirate-themed book kind of centered around some of the legends and myth of Anne, Bonnie, and Mary Read, who are two historical pirates, though there isn't a whole lot of historical record about them, which kind of makes them a lot of fun in the same way that I think a lot of pirate lore, like around Blackbeard and people like that, you know, they're larger than life figures, and things like that have been done a lot with some of their male counterparts of the time period. And so I thought it was kind of time to play with the myth of Anne Bonny a bit and kind of help bring her legend to comics, which has been a lot of fun to work on with artist Craig Cermak.
Yeah, the thing that has me most excited, so I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar, I'm sure some of them, but there's that whole mystique about pirates had this thing, this superstition where if you let a woman on the boat, it was like doomed. Like the boat would sink, everybody would die. It just, so they had to sneak on. To me, that, like, just at the start where you're starting with that conceit, it automatically I'm in. It's just such an interesting idea.
Yeah, and that's actually right where we open the series, which is with the meeting of the two main characters and playing a little bit with the drag as well, which in some cases there's kind of records of at least Mary Read being in drag on board the ships. And there's even a story where at some point the two of them meet, but they're both in drag, so they don't know the other is a woman until much later. So so we play with that a little bit and have some fun with the story as well.
Cool. And what about your project with Dark Horse, which is another one that kind of has its roots in history? It kind of seems to be your wheelhouse.
Yeah, definitely. Butcher of Paris issue 4 actually comes out this week, and then issue 5 will be out in April, the conclusion of kind of our little mini series. That one is definitely, I mean, it's hard to call something like that a passion project because there's so much emotion behind you know, reading into some of the history of Jews and the Holocaust and a serial killer that was taking advantage of the entire situation. It's not a light topic, but it's definitely something that, you know, I've wanted to tell that story for a very long time. And so kind of finally seeing it out in the world and complete with artwork from Dean Kotz and colors from Jason Wordy, I just saw, you know, the conclusion of the series issue 5 yesterday, and it's really impactful. I actually got goosebumps kind of seeing that final artwork come through.
Yeah, I'm personally waiting for the trade on that one. I want to kind of read it all in one sitting, but it was an aspect of history that I didn't know anything about. You know, the fact that there was a serial killer that was in, you know, in France during World War II, and kind of you know, taking advantage of the chaos of the war to kill just an ungodly number of people. So I'm looking forward to checking it out. I'll let you know what I think when I'm done.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
As I said, we're here to talk about Artemis and the Assassin. Also has some roots in World War II from Aftershock. But I do have to ask, we haven't had you on since Descendants finished. So tell us about your experience with Descendants, the first series you did with Aftershock. When it was all said and done, did you have a sense of relief? Was it a sense of accomplishment? Were you just glad it was over? Give us your feelings.
It's definitely nice to see, I'm sitting next to a box of trades of Descendant, and it's really nice to see that all collected and come together. And of course, being like the book nerd I am, I took it out and I'm like, ooh, like spot gloss matte cover. So having it collected and working with a publisher that pays attention to even little details like that is, I think, really rewarding. You know, somebody that saw this project through, I remember, you know, sitting down with Mike Martz and Lee Kramer from Aftershock and just talking through this story with them. And, you can tell when people are genuinely interested and, you know, we're kind of going back and forth with different ideas and directions and, where else the story could take us. And, you know, from that one moment, you know, a couple years ago to sitting next to the trade it's a really cool thing. And definitely one of the reasons I continue to work with Aftershock, because they are, you know, really good about seeing things through and helping you bring that idea to life, no matter how crazy it might be, like Artemis.
Yeah, and when you originally conceived the series, you know, you're talking about working with Lee and Mike, you must have had in your mind kind of the reaction you were hoping for from fans and readers. Was that realized throughout the project?
I think so in large part. I get tagged and stuff, so sometimes it's unavoidable, but regardless, I try to stay a little bit away from that just because I don't know how it would influence me, especially since I was still writing the story, like when it was announced and coming out. We're kind of always in the midst of like writing and creating, because this is just that weird medium where things come out on a monthly basis. So like one book might be in the world and people are speculating about something. So I just, I think I try to keep more to myself when I'm working on the project. But from what I've seen, there's been some really positive reception, especially from, you know, internally with Aftershock, which has resulted in quite a bit more work with them. So I'm really pleased with that. And I'm happy that, you know, somebody like Mike Martz, that has such a history in the industry, has helped me craft these stories and helped me improve as a writer as well.
Well, I really enjoyed it. And it felt like, all right, we got a complete story. It was all wrapped up. And then you threw us at the very end with a hint that there could be more to come. So any plans on that? Or would you like to return to it?
I mean, I've known where the story would go past five issues, like the day that I sat down and talked with Lee and Mike. We know where it would be going. I think a lot of it, you know, is about sales and seeing how that comes out on the other end. So I know where it would go, and hopefully we'll get that chance down the road. But I'm kind of a jerk. I don't like endings, so I guess my endings in a lot of series tend to be like, well, here's a tease for what's next. I think the only one that doesn't do that is Butcher so far, because Butcher is just so concrete. Like what happens historically happens in real life, and we really did want to wrap that up and give people a really good sense of conclusion, because it's such a dark story that I think leaving that one open-ended would make people rightfully angry.
All right. Well, in terms of Descendant, everybody, be sure you go out, pick up a copy of the trade if you haven't read it already. And if you want more, be sure and encourage your friends and fellow comic fans to pick it up as well. Just one last question about your previous stuff before we move into to Artemis and the Assassin. Now that you've kind of been working in the industry for a little while here, you've kind of gotten some series under your belt. Is there anything that you've learned on your journey so far that you really wish you'd known at the beginning that we can, any aspiring creators can take to heart?
This really is a business. I think it's helped me immensely to kind of find the people that are there to advocate for me, whether it's people within a publisher or I have representatives as well. And I mean, that has made a big difference, just knowing that I'm not alone trying to navigate the sea, which I know is easier said than done, to just like go out there and find a book rep or something like that, or a media rep, but just knowing who's going to advocate for you is kind of a big deal. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the industry is pretty competitive and it is a business. And so learning how to market your materials and yourself is a much bigger part of this than I think I expected when I started.
Good advice. Good advice. Well, like I said, your new series coming out from Aftershock, the first issue, I was immediately sucked in. I was like, wait, I'm done already? Dang, I need issue two. It comes out on March 18th. Everybody will be in comic stores and available digitally. It's called Artemis and the Assassin. Obviously, we don't want to get too spoilery, Steph, but what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so the premise is about a time-traveling assassin who is sent back in time to kill Virginia Hall during World War II. Virginia Hall was a real-life spy that was responsible for helping the Allies collect Nazi secrets. She was kind of infamous because she had a wooden leg and she would hide information and secrets and things like that in her leg and then help. It would help her kind of cross borders at a time when I think it was, you know, more men were getting flagged at borders. Virginia would do things like dress as an old woman and limp and things like that. So it would kind of play up people being like, oh, we don't have to worry about her. Meanwhile, she's carrying around like secrets, codes and things like that in her wooden leg because she's awesome. So it's really somebody in history that stuck out to me as somebody that like, I just fell in love with her immediately. This was somebody that, she had an accident as a child, lost her leg, and was kind of told that she wouldn't be much. She worked as a secretary for a long time and was kind of just trying to do more. Like, she was always trying to do more, and people were always telling her no. And she just never stopped. She became a battlefield nurse and was eventually approached by the SOE and became one of the most infamous, and for U.S. history, actually, the most decorated spy in U.S. history. So I wanted to play with the real life and the fictitious. So Maya, our assassin, is completely fictitious, and her job is to go back in time. She's hired to kill Virginia Hall. Obviously, somebody wants to change history by taking Virginia out of the equation, which would give the Nazis quite the advantage. So when Maya goes back in time thinking she's just here to kill this target, Virginia, being a complete badass, fights back and does not make this easy. And the two of them end up hurtling kind of headlong through time together while trying to kill each other and dealing with outside factors like the fact that they're time traveling and now other assassins want them dead. So it's pulpy. It's definitely adventure. It's probably the most action-packed piece that I've written to date.
So you've got these two incredible women, and I read up on Virginia Hall. I have to admit, I knew the name, but I had no idea. So I just went to Wikipedia, and obviously, you know, that's not always, you know, the most accurate kind of thing. But just to kind of get the Cliff's Notes, and I was blown away by the accomplishments of this woman. But at the same time, kind of frustrated that she kept doing so much. Like you said, she was constantly trying to do more, constantly trying to help, and I guess just sort of. An aspect of the time period she grew up in. She was constantly underestimated and doubted and kind of put in a corner where her skills couldn't be utilized to help, win the war sooner, help save more lives. It's so frustrating from, an aspect of looking back with hindsight. And then we have Maya, as you mentioned, this assassin who's made up a whole cloth. I don't know that you would say that Maya is the antagonist or the villain necessarily. I think you've hinted that there's a lot more to it than that. What I wanted to know is clearly you probably did a lot of research on Virginia Hall and tried to be somewhat historically accurate in her portrayal here. But Maya's made up whole cloth, what was that like? Creating this character of Maya and then playing her off of a person that was really existed in history. Was it challenging? Was it fun? Was it a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both, but it's definitely a lot of fun. Maya is, I wanted two very strong female characters, but they had to be so starkly different that the differences in them would cause problems in and of themselves. Like, even if you get past the fact that they're trying to kill each other, just their personalities are going to clash. Maya, as we do develop her kind of personal backstory and history in the story, there's definitely the struggle of, is she the bad guy? And I don't think it's something that Maya had really thought about until she encounters Virginia Hall, and Virginia kind of makes her really think about what she's doing and why she's doing it. And so Maya has to contend with, like, you know, she's not really the good guy here. And what that will mean for her future in her actions with Virginia. So they're both really really different. I mean, Maya's got some kind of futuristic, I don't really want to call them superpowers. We do develop where those came from as the story progresses. So, like, Maya's backstory is a bit of a mystery at the start of the story, and we get to kind of access her history through Virginia Hall, who is very confused. Like, she's kind of our point of reference as the reader. Obviously, when somebody is all of a sudden taken out of their time period and in the Wild West or ancient Egypt or wherever they're going, that's confusing. So I think we see that mostly through Virginia as, like, the audience's point of view here. Especially as she clashes with Maya. So developing Maya was a lot of fun. She's named after actually my cat, and kind of has the same personality as my cat, like very prickly, possibly wants attention and you go to give it to her, you know, and she bites your finger or something like that. So getting past the defensive walls of Maya is another element to this as well.
Yeah, you do a great job of kind of establishing who Maya is. Right away at the beginning of the first issue, we get a scene where Maya goes back and takes out another kind of infamous person in history. I don't want to spoil who it is, but I thought that was really cool as well. Just the fact that she, and again, you have to pick it up and read it and just see how she doesn't take any crap from anybody. You get that right away, and she's very skilled at what she does. So, right away, you kind of establish what a threat, I suppose, is the word you could use, that she is. So, did you have any trouble deciding on kind of an example of who she could take out early on to kind of establish her bona fides?
Yes. I definitely remember having that conversation with artist Megan Hetrick and just being like, okay, well, what if we put her here? Because, like, you know, the target that she takes out at the beginning is more to demonstrate who Maya is and what she does, versus, you know, we don't really see the ramifications of that event. But we wanted it to be something really visually impactful, something people know about, so it's recognizable, but going like the JFK route was just, it's kind of overdone. And just not, I think, visually as different. Like, I wanted the book to have a lot of different visual feels and tones, which is why, you know, we get to go to so many different time periods, and not in like a kitschy way, but each one plays a really significant role in the story. While also, I think it's pretty fun to just take people all over the place and make, you know, Virginia and Maya have to interact with these different time periods. So Maya's personality is going to be the same, whether she is in Russia, Egypt, the Wild West, Central Park, modern day times. Like, Maya is a pretty static, this is who she is, she's probably going to kill somebody kind of personality.
Yeah. And here, just like the Descendants with the story you're telling in Artemis and the Assassin, you know, we talked about the book you have coming up with Top Cow, you're drawing on real events and then, you know, injecting this, you know, these fictional elements to it and really almost enriching history in a way, but at the same time educating. Because like I said, when I read this first issue of Artemis and Assassin, I immediately had to go find out who Virginia Hall is. I know much more about her than I did before. Is that why you do it? Is it a love of history? Like, what is it that this seems to be the genre you like to play in?
I mean, it's really comfortable for me. I think, I've talked about this a little bit before, but I have a really unique father. He's a book collector, but he's also just a really big history buff. His big era, he really likes the Napoleonic era. So, I mean, growing up, I always wanted to be like my dad. dad, and if my dad was reading a book, I'm reading a book. So like, oh, okay, I'm 6 years old reading a biography on Horatio Nelson. This sounds great. Like, I didn't understand it, but I thought it was the coolest thing ever because my dad was into it. You know, my dad is the kind of dad that was like, our father-daughter bonding was to go to different battlefields throughout the U.S. and things like that together. So it was something that I think was very much a part of growing up. And when my dad realized I was into it, he like really leaned into it with me. So it's very comfortable for me to kind of do the research, and I like learning new things. So I definitely like when I get to learn about somebody like Virginia Hall. And I mean, my biggest thing is needing to stop researching at some point. I like reading and I like learning about the time periods and things like that. So it's definitely my comfort zone and something I want to do even more with, probably branching out into actual historical fiction, novels, even nonfiction. I've talked with a few places about doing some nonfiction work, biographies and things like that. I really love somebody like Eric Larson and Dan Simmons and their work with kind of both fiction and nonfiction and working with history and making it super accessible and interesting. Because I think a lot of people are turned off from history because it can be very textbook, cut and dry. But, right. You know, the reason I would pick up on somebody like Virginia Hall is now we're looking at World War II through the gaze of this incredible woman that I don't think a lot of people knew about. And that kind of changes your perspective on the era, getting to see it through the eyes of this really amazing, infamous spy that was helping kill Nazis and with a wooden leg when people told her she couldn't, which I think is really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it gives us, you know, kind of a doorway there. It's, you know, relatable. We can all relate, I think, to being, you know, us underestimated at some point in our lives. And just the fact that, you know, she kept being told no, but you know, she had that perseverance to keep going. It's just, again, it makes it relatable. It's our doorway into the story. Was your interest in Virginia Hall as a historical figure, was that kind of the seed that this story grew out of?
Yes. I think it was really two stories initially. Like, I had an idea about kind of an assassination organization that would let me play with time and history. And I knew I wanted to do something eventually with Virginia Hall. And then I was like, well, I think I could probably marry these two stories. And they linked up really, really well.
Now, when you said about to start to build out the story beyond just kind of the initial ideas and plot, obviously you needed, you know, artists to bring this world to life and bring these characters to life. Who are your collaborators that you're working with on the series?
Yeah, so Megan Hetrick, Francesca Fantini, and Lauren Affey are the main team. Obviously, my letterer, Troy Petrie, who I think has done everything but one book with me. I definitely love having him on the team as well.
Yeah, I love that it's an all-girl team. I mean, I don't know if that was purposeful or not, but the fact that you're telling the story is two badass females. I haven't ever met Francesca or Lauren, but I can vouch that Megan is a badass for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Megan, it's really fun working with Megan because she's got this, I think her background is Taekwondo and mine is Muay Thai. So every once in a while, if I'm writing a fight scene, I'll just stop and be like, Megan, you got this. like you know. You know how to fight. So, you know, choreographing with Megan is super fun because I know it's going to be realistic. I know it's going to make sense and kind of all fit together. So that's definitely one of the most fun aspects of working with her. The all female team thing is really unintentional. It was just I knew I wanted to work with Megan. Francesca is also just a wonderful fit, and you'll see her work starting in book one. So Francesca's work really takes over in issue three, but she also did a mini story about Maya's kind of history. We get to see like a young Maya, and you get to see that kind of broken up over issues one and two as well. So Francesca's been on board since the beginning because, I mean, her work is just phenomenal, and she's a really good storyteller. So I think she really came in and helped develop a lot of what the characters look like, and that's been a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, and then Lauren, she was your color artist that you worked with on The Descendant, so I was glad, and I liked her work there, so I was glad to see her name on this project as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was definitely really intentional. You know, everything went so well on Descendant that when we were throwing around names for colorists, that was, I think, the only name we really threw around, and it ended up working out.
So did you have a pretty good idea of kind of how you wanted the world? So, I mean, obviously we're talking about different periods in history here. So, you know, you've got to draw on that as a visual artist. But in terms of, you know, the look for the characters and such, did you have a pretty good idea in your head? Was that something you worked with your collaborators on some back and forth, or did you just let them kind of run with it?
It was definitely very collaborative. Maya's look is very unique. So, you know, designing, we wanted it to be a couple things. I mean, we wanted the look to be really sleek, but we also wanted Maya to have a look that, like, if you give her a silhouette, like, you know, that's Maya coming in the room or whatever, you know, that's Maya's shadow. And we really wanted to play with also the kind of mysterious markings on her body that we go into more detail on later in the series. Those are very intentionally designed with also a lot of cultural influence and things like that. So a lot of that is back and forth collaboration. There's also a very heavy influence from, you know, Megan being the professional artist, being able to say, like, yes, this silhouette works, or no, this doesn't. So, you know, at the end of the day, Megan was way better than me and was able to really bring all of our ideas together and simplify it. And I think make a really sleek design for Maya that I think is engaging while also, I think, builds into her character. She's kind of simple. She's got a job to do. She's going to do it. So everything about her is just very functional.
You know, you bring up a good point. Megan's been around. As you said, a really accomplished artist, a professional. She knows what works and what doesn't. Have you found throughout the course of working on this project that you feel like you're able to draw on some of the experience that Megan has? Like, is she helping you in your mind become a better comic creator?
I mean, I think with any collaboration, any positive collaboration, there's a really good give and take back and forth between, like, you know, me being able to write something and have an artist be like, you know, here's their interpretation of it or their version of it based on what I've written on the page. So I see what I'm writing more as a blueprint. So as long as we're building the same house, you know, if she wants different window panes, then it's still going to stand and be structurally sound. So I think that really works well when you have a really good collaboration with somebody that can just text you and be like, hey, I had this thought or that thought, and go back and forth together. And it makes it an enjoyable experience. And I think that's one of the things, too, I love with Craig and our pirate story, A Man Among Ye. Craig and I are on the phone almost every day, you know, going back and forth with ideas. And that might seem like a lot, but I think the end product is so much better for it. And I think that's true of Artemis as well. And, you know, same goes with Francesca. We talk a lot over email and build something together. And we aren't afraid to say, like, hey, this is working or this isn't working, and try to solve problems collaboratively, which is also what I just love about the medium.
Yeah, I pretty commonly will say that when you have a team of people that are creating something and they're gelling together, and most importantly, they're having fun working on it, that comes across on the page like so much more, I think, than the creators realize. You know, as a reader, as a lifelong comic fan, I've read at this point probably tens of thousands of comics. You can tell that, like, just reading this first issue, you guys are having a lot of fun with this, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, the goal was also, I've done a lot of serious work, and I know that Virginia Hall's backstory is very serious. Butcher is super serious, and I wanted to still be able to strike a balance with tone here, which is, you know, obviously something like the Nazis in this time period. It's really dark, but the story itself is very pulpy and action-oriented, so trying to find that right tone that fit with the story. While it was initially difficult, I think because, again, we're all working together and having a lot of fun with what the story is, I think we were able to accomplish that.
Yeah, the other thing that I like, and it was very apparent when I read The Descendant, is that your stories are very much character first. You know, you're not ever coming at it from a point of saying this is the theme or this is the conceit or the concept that I want to explore, you know, whether it's, you know, our family history or, you know, in this case, kind of the way that Virginia Hall was underestimated, you know, throughout her career or the plight of, you know, gender dynamics or something like that. You're not injecting some kind of, hey, I want to explore this theme or I want to explore this idea. It's character first. And if those themes organically happen, then, you know, that's just good storytelling. Would you say that's true?
Well, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not one to get up on any kind of soapbox, but I am absolutely all for diverse characters that are really unique and awesome in their own rights. And I think Virginia and Maya both fit that bill. Neither of them really come out and say anything specific about, you know, gender dynamics or anything like that. But it will be clearly at work. Just I think it's issue two. We kind of get to see a little bit more of Virginia's backstory, especially with the loss of her leg. You kind of get to see how that happened and how she dealt with it. And I think it just speaks a lot to who Virginia was as a person that, you know, she laid in a hospital bed with people being like, all right, that's it. Like whatever future she did have, it's over now. And she goes from that moment to battlefield nurse to international spy, which is quite the transition. And I think that does speak a lot to her. And I think readers are smart enough to pick up on those things without me interjecting and being like, hey, did you guys see what happened here? Like I like letting those unfold and I like letting readers kind of make their own inferences and taking from the story what they want.
Now is this a finite series? Do you have, we talked about your aversion to endings, but will we be finished at a particular time? Do you know how many issues has that been determined, that sort of thing?
There is, it's going to be, again, determined by sales. We know where the issues go after five. So the first arc stops with five. There will be a natural kind of conclusion and kind of some items wrap up in the first arc. Some you kind of see how they will carry over. So I think there's a blend of cliffhanger plus satisfying conclusion at the end of five. But absolutely, we know where it continues. And I kind of set it up at the end of this five to be like, hey, there's hopefully more room for further adventures between the two of them. And you know, if people continue to buy the book, then hopefully we will get to tell them.
Yeah, I wouldn't even mind, see, just from how awesome that opening sequence is with Maya, I wouldn't even mind like some prequel stuff. Some, hey, let's see what Maya did, you know, before. Especially if Megan's doing the artwork, because it's just beautiful to look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Stephanie. It's really great to talk about this series. I'm really excited. Just a reminder, everybody, March 18th is when it goes on sale. And there's one other thing that I wanted to add about Virginia Hall, just to kind of send home the impact of how amazing she was. You know, there is a CIA museum that has basically only five sections that are dedicated to individuals. Virginia Hall has one. The other four are for guys that were the head of the CIA. And I think that is so amazing. And I really am glad that you're telling her story, even if we're adding in these fictionalized elements, because I feel like as an American, I didn't know enough about this hero of World War II. And so I really hope that the story resonates with readers and it spurs some people to go and read about her real life heroics beyond the heroics she's going to be performing in this this really cool comic that's coming out.
Absolutely. Thank you for adding that. She's a really, really cool figure. And yes, we definitely take, you know, obviously a lot of liberties with sending somebody through time travel, who I don't think historically time traveled. You know, we do touch on elements of her actual history and backstory and things like that. But, you know, once time travel starts, I think it's a little bit more of our extrapolation of what her character is like.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, I can't wait to read more. And I'm also really excited for your project that's coming out with Top Cow, A Man Among Ye. Still time to let your retailers know, because obviously the final order cutoff for that hasn't happened yet, but it's going to be on stands May 13th, everybody. And although the final order cutoff for Artemis and the Assassin has already happened, doesn't mean you can't still let your retailer know, because they can always up their orders at the distributor level. So be sure, if you're interested, to let them know to save you a copy so you don't miss out.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Anything else that you want to let our listeners know, Stephanie?
No, but, you know, thank you to everyone that keeps reading my work and letting me write, you know, crazy historical fiction. It's definitely what I enjoy the most about this job.
Great. Well, thanks again for joining me, and best of luck with your two upcoming series.
Cool. Thank you so much.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.